Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday the 30th of October 2020.
The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited and will be read and presented by Vara and Tom Williams.
Hello. The first main headline story this week is Big Blow to Future of City Hospital. A new hospital will not be built in Winchester, as health chiefs reveal shortlisted locations for the major development, the nearest being 13 miles away. Prime Minister Boris Johnson confirmed earlier this month that funding would be given for a new hospital in Basingstoke, but now Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust have cemented that statement by revealing that both sides identified are close to Basingstoke. It knocks any hopes that the Royal Hampshire County Hospital will retain its current range of services. Excuse me. including an A&E unit and consultant-led maternity at Florence Portal House. Work to identify potential sites for a new acute centralised hospital has been ongoing since October 2019, with a search across Winchester, Basingstoke, Andover, Eastleigh, Alton and surrounding areas. New hospital chiefs have shortlisted two locations – the first between Basingstoke and Winchester, near to Junction 7 of the M3, with the other on the current site of the Basingstoke and Northampshire Hospital in the north of the town. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which leads the Hampshire Together programme, said on Tuesday, "After an exhaustive site selection process, I'm delighted that we have two site options for a possible new acute centralised hospital to serve Mid and North Hampshire. Whilst we have identified two possible sites, no final decisions have been taken, and we look forward to talking to our staff and the public about our proposals for the future when we go out to public consultation early next year. We are looking forward to discussing the pros and cons of each of the possible locations as part of the formal consultation process. But this is not just about a building. We are using this as an opportunity to think about how we provide health services which will meet the needs of our population for decades to come. We have already announced six potential clinical service options, and further work is underway to develop a shortlist for consultation where service and site options come together. As well as the location of any new hospital, we're also looking forward to speaking to staff, patients and the public about the way we propose to work together to deliver health, well-being and care services in the future. This includes making significant investment at Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, as well as exploring opportunities to provide additional services in other locations across North and Mid-Hampshire, giving all of our patients access to high-quality, timely and sustainable health care as close to home as possible. No further details have been given in terms of timeframe for this work to be carried out or what a major refurbishment at the RHCH could entail. MP for Winchester, Steve Brine, said that this is about replacing Basingstoke Hospital is the worst-kept secret of them all. It will certainly serve the population of North Hampshire, but it would be a place people from Winchester and Chandler's Ford have to travel to for most acute services. I repeat my call on the clinicians driving this not to give up on the Royal Hampshire County and now be crystal clear what we gain and what we lose in Winchester." Winchester City and Hampshire County Councillor Martin Todd said, "The hospital is a vital part of our city, both for the care it provides and the people it employs. It's disappointing that the decision to focus on Basingstoke seems so rushed after the government decided to cut short the consultation. Of the options on the table, I and my colleagues want to see our hospital have the proposed centre for planned surgery and the new outpatient centre. But there are still a lot of other unanswered questions where the options are much more vague. Will we still have a 24-hour centre in Winchester where people can go for urgent care? What will our maternity services look like? These are both essential for Winchester and the wider area. The proposals for maternity care last time round were far too restrictive. We need a clearer plan.
And the second headline is, Battle is poised over future of City Garden. A much-loved beauty spot which backs onto Winchester Cathedral could be built on with the proposed sparking of a planning battle. Back in 2018, Alan Stone purchased Water Garden off Colebrook Street, prompting fears that it would be developed. He reassured the City Council that this would not be the case, saying, "What's the point of having something that beautiful and building on it?" But now Mr. Stone has applied to build a two-storey dwelling, as well as form two new openings in the garden wall. The plan has prompted several calls to the Chronicle from conservationists. Christopher McCall QC told the Chronicle, "Things change. A planning application has been made, and it now seems that the owners no longer see the point of having something so beautiful, and do indeed wish to build on it. Private profit is, it seems, to outweigh the loss of public amenity." In view of the unqualified assurances given so recently, and given for public consumption, may we hope that the Council will see that this is a development which should not be allowed to proceed. A spokesman for the City of Winchester Trust said, "We don't just want a half-heartedly objection to the plan because the house does not look very nice, because the applicant will then come back with improved plans. The principle is that we do not want any development here. We are keen not to have anything that will ruin the symmetry of this very peaceful area." The spokesperson added that the planning application was submitted to the City Council on the September the 14th, but the orange notices were not put up until around October the 24th. The public has until November the 11th to send in written representations. The Water Garden was created by Sir Peter Smithers, Winchester MP from 1950 to 1964. It features a pond, classic statue underneath a magnolia tree, only some 50 yards from the west end of the Winchester Cathedral. The Chronicle has contacted Richard Lowe, who is Mr. Stone's agent, and is awaiting a response. Alan Stone is the former leader of Hampshire UKIP. The plans, which are split between two separate applications, have so far received two public objections. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the gardens with artist Don Lavelle painting it.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices. The following deaths have been announced. Benjamin, Frederick John Benjamin. Breeley, Anthony John Breeley, aged 82. Haynes, Pamela Pammy Wells. Haynes, aged 61. And Kennelly, Edward James Kennelly, aged 96.
Christian comment this week is written by Liz Tatham and is headed "God is in the Silence." Let us perhaps try for a little hope in our lives. It is difficult with more lockdowns, rising infection numbers and deaths. Concerns about governments, who the new leader of the Western world will be, what will he do, and so on, are brought to our attention on the constant news streams. I'm not going to suggest we implore in prayer for what we think as normal or desirable, or even a restoration to what was before. I'm suggesting that we place ourselves, hopefully and in trust, in God's hands. Those of us who pray often or infrequently can sometimes pray fervently for a shopping list of what we think is needed or necessary, when actually God undoubtedly has better and more creative ideas for us. Paul's letter to the Romans 5:24-27 was given to me by a friend at the weekend. Paul says that in hope we are saved, but more importantly, that hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what is seen? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience. He goes on to explain that the Spirit will help us, will show us how to pray with sighs too deep for words. So my reading of this is that if we ask for what we know, then we will not be able to wait with patience, but if we ask for what he has in store for us to come to fruition, not knowing what newness this might bring, we can wait with patience and wonder. God is in the silence. I have heard a few times over the last few weeks, and to sit in silent trust and patience in God's presence is a peaceful and restorative thing to do. Life is full of change and some confusion in this time, and there are many voices with much to say on every subject. I have found myself lost for words on many events, except ones of social justice, where I know we can intervene and offer help to others who need it. So let us be silent for a while and listen to God's voice and pray for what we have not seen, so that we can be patient. Let us hope we are restored to new ways after the experience of lockdown, that we are open to what has been learned about how we live in this beautiful but fragile environment, about the way we relate and care for each other, about the way we spend our time. While we wait, we can feed the hungry, visit the elderly and sick, and look after our own loved ones. God does love us, and ultimately wants only what is good, so all we can really do is wait and trust. Come and wait and pray with me in the silence, with sighs too deep for words. And that was by Liz Tatham.
Moving on, we come to letters to the editor. And the first letter I had, Pierre, is something that from the headlines, The Water Garden. It's from Christopher McCall, QC, Ferry Lane, Molesford-on-Thames, Oxfordshire. Sir, in July 2018, you carried an article about the beautiful little water garden created by the late Sir Peter Smithers on land behind Colebrook Street, which he had purchased from the City Council with a view to opening up to the public a new perspective on the cathedral. Its recent purchase at the time of your article had led to concerns that it might be subject to development. But in your article, you reported that a representative of the new owners had said, "What is the point of having something so beautiful and building on it?" It was an apt comment. It is in truth a thing of beauty, and one that gives great pleasure to those who pass by. But things change. A planning application has now been made. It seems that the owners no longer see the point of having something so beautiful and do indeed wish to build a house, if not on top of the water garden, then overshadowing it, literally so, as a steel balcony is proposed which appears to project almost to the edge of the water. The application says the water garden will be left intact. Well, that is a matter of opinion. Its character will be destroyed, and it is that character that makes it what it is. It is said that protected trees will not be affected, but one wonders how they can survive the drastic pruning necessary to make way for the development. If the application succeeds, this small oasis will not be the same. It will have been denied the space to breathe, and Sir Peter's vision will have been betrayed. In view of the unqualified assurances given so recently and given for public consumption, we may hope that the Council will see that this is a development which should not be allowed to proceed. Christopher McCall.
And the second letter is also about the water garden. It's from John Holder. Sir, It is very disturbing that the priceless Colebrook Street water garden in the shadow of the cathedral is threatened with destruction. For 5 decades, Winchester residents and visitors have loved the sight and sound of this spring-fed pool, framed by delightful hedges and magnolia trees. Thanks to the generosity of its creator, former Winchester MP Sir Peter Smithers, Water Close is a modern treasure, a public work of art, a heritage asset, and even a tourist attraction. Application has been made to build over half the tiny garden. A modern two-story house will stand over the pool just a few feet away, with a balcony above, One of the pair of curved hedges will be grubbed up, and the garden design will be ruined, the trees cut back to make space. The architectural plan shows a home which will be quite inappropriate for its location in the conservation area. The roof will be seen over the garden walls, further spoiling the great visual amenity. Walkers looking from the path to the cathedral close will see into the window of the ground floor bedroom just a few feet away. The water garden should be saved as a green space. It would be tragic if it were built over. Little time remains to express opinions on the proposal. The closing date to contact Winchester City Council is November the 11th. And that's from John Holder of Colebrook Place, Winchester.
This letter is entitled Pity the Young and comes from Christine Moore. Our young people deserve better. They have had no proper education since March. No saying goodbye to their friends when school broke up, followed by a shambolic examination result system. They are faced with paying the huge debt that is being racked up along with funding future pensions for the older members of our society, for which they will get no thanks. What else can we do to them? We could decide not to feed them, but which of our local members of Parliament would vote for such a thing? Christine Moore, Park Road, Winchester.
Peter Grant is concerned about bin lorries and writes, Sir, further to recent correspondentry, traffic pollution and congestion, particularly in the narrow streets adjacent to the cathedral, part of the problem is the use of particularly huge bin lorries by Biffa. Last week, one of these monsters was stuck in Simmons Street, holding up all the traffic with all their engines running for about 20 minutes, while the operatives tried to manoeuvre past a parked car with its wing mirror sticking out. Apparently, they had to call out their supervisor to come and solve their problem. There have always been problems with bin lorries in our narrow streets, but the current lorries are enormous and quite unsuited to the streets that they are being used in. Surely the council could insist on smaller lorries for the narrow streets of the town centre. After all, the council are the customer and Biffa the supplier. That is from Peter Grant of Simmons Street, Winchester.
This one is headed Beauty Spot from Peter Morgan. How sad that no more generations of our children will be splashing in the shallows of the Itchen at Cow Down. This comes from the Chronicle, October the 22nd. My children have picnicked there more times than I can count, and it has been a delight to see other families also enjoying the precious few yards of riverbank that's open to the public. I hoped my grandchildren would follow this decades-old tradition, but it seems local landowners have other plans. I hope they find the view of the riverbank enhanced by the metal fencing they have erected. Regrettably, in the decades I have lived in the valley, more and more open spaces have been wired off to stop local children playing there. The COVID emergency has increased social division in Hampshire as elsewhere. What a shame that the landowners of the Itchen Valley have chosen to exacerbate this by depriving families who do not own large estates access to this celebrated beauty spot. And that's from Peter Morgan of Easton.
A letter from Judith Martin is headed Free Meals. Sir, MP Steve Brine says in his letter from Westminster, Chronicle October the 22nd, that the NHS, both locally and nationally, remains his priority. How then did he vote against the Labour motion in Parliament last week to fund free school meals over the holidays until Easter 2021 for disadvantaged children? Has he not realised in his time as an MP, as a health minister, or even just as a human being, that poverty results in ill health, which in turn results in pressures on the NHS? The Cameron government seemed to be taken by surprise that depression increased as a result of austerity. A depressed parent will have trouble being a good parent. The depression could arise because of unemployment, insecure employment, fear of eviction, or any of the myriad other problems produced by simply not having enough money. Now, just as austerity was supposed to be lifted, COVID-19 has turned the world upside down. People face huge uncertainty, and the economy is plunging, and that's before Brexit is finally finalised. Can Steve and Brian really not imagine what it must be like to be able to not be able to give your children sufficient good food? When the only reliable meal of the day is the one provided despite years of attrition by the school meal service at school? When you know your child cannot grow healthy because you cannot feed them adequately? The report in Hansard of the parliamentary debate lists no contribution from Mr. Brine, so we have no insight into how he justifies his vote. Perhaps he feels it's not a Winchester problem, although he is not averse to being photographed at food banks. He even opened one in Winchester. A website called givefood.org.uk suggests people politely help local and national politicians understand that food banks shouldn't exist in our country. His vote against the bill, triggered by Marcus Rashford, who knows about being hungry as a child, suggests the message hasn't gone through. For the record, MP Flick Drummond voted the same way and equally failed to explain why. Poor families will suffer and the NHS will bear the eventual cost. And that is from Judith Martin of Romsey Road, Winchester.
This one is headed in praise of school architects. I have recently seen references to the lovely new primary school at Barton Farm, including one in this week's Chronicle, October the 22nd, but with no mention of the name of the architects. There are not many good modern buildings in Winchester, so it seems to me only fair that when architects generally can get a lot of criticism, they should be given publicity when their work is praised. And that comes from Jill Collymore of Cannon Street, Winchester, and there's an editor's note to it. The Barton Farm Primary Academy School was designed by the Architects Department at Hampshire County Council.
The final letter is headed A New Name. Sir, the meadows near St. Cross have always been known as the Water Meadows. Now there are 9 very happy cows eating grass and doing poos all day. I think the meadows should be recalled the Cowpat Meadows. You really have to watch where you are walking now. And that's from Anne Gildersleeve of Cripstead Lane, St. Cross.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk or write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL.
The Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is headed "Will our city be as protected in future?" and refers to the Water Garden. A planning application to build on one of the city's most beautiful and tranquil gardens has been submitted. Alan Stone wants to put a house on Water Garden, despite promising he would never develop the land when he bought it 2 years ago. No doubt his proposals will be met by a storm of objection from angry locals over the next few weeks. Winchester's community is known for its togetherness in these situations, and the plans will probably refuse this time around. But perhaps what is more worrying is the future. The Prime Minister wishes to loosen restrictions in a countrywide shake-up of the planning system. This is to allow faster house building and could see news of all applications being moved online rather than being publicly available in the usual places. As residents, will we even have the chance to object to plans? Or will it just be public bodies and trusts who can object if the proposals go against certain criteria? Who knows? Maybe the changes will work in Mr. Stone's favour.
And here is First Person, which comes from Ron Allison, and he says is a lockdown-free column. "You're not going to be writing about lockdown, are you?" my son asked me. "No," I assured him. "I think most of us have had enough of lockdown to last a lifetime. Don't worry." So here we are, and I've mentioned the dreaded word twice, despite my best intentions. Time to move on quickly and divert attention. So the question now is, what should I write about? Domestic politics? No, we've had enough of Boris and Keir for the time being, and in any case, they're probably going to be around for some time to come. Sport? Well, I'd love to, but not every Chronicle reader shares my passion for the Saints. So, how about American politics? Yes, with the presidential election coming next week, there can't be anything more significant than the decision of that US voters will make, not only for their own sakes, but also for the world as a whole. A president of the United States has unique powers during his 4 or more years in the White House. This year, voters know what they will be getting with Trump. Biden is another matter. On the one hand, he will be different. On the other, he will be inexperienced in wielding total power, but a lot more experienced than the current incumbent. Will it be a case of the devil you know? My wife and son, I ought to tell you, have voted for Biden. For those of my age, FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, was the first president of whom we became aware. He won 3 elections and with Winston Churchill established the special relationship which has meant so much to both countries in war and peace. The importance of the vice presidency was emphasised when FDR died suddenly and Harry Truman replaced him. It was again a reality after the assassination of JFK. Lyndon Johnson moved into the White House, later on winning an election in his own right. Back home, as it were, I had a sharp lesson in national politics in 1945. I was just entering my teens. Churchill was a hero for his wartime leadership, and in my view was a dead cert to win that year's general election. I simply could not believe he was rejected by the British electorate, and it was only when my Labour-supporting grandfather explained to me what had happened in Britain in the 1930s that I gained some understanding. I later did my national service in the Royal Army Education Corps, which had emerged from the Army Bureau of Current Affairs after the war. It was claimed by Sun that ABCA had played a significant role in helping the Labour Party win the 1945 general election. Whether that was true or not, the RAEC, mostly sergeants with some short service officers, did serve a useful purpose. Attached as I was to the 1st Battalion of the Irish Guards, I taught a good number how to write a letter home. "Dear Mum, I'm sending you £5, but not this week." As well as, in some cases, how to write in the first place. I'm happy to say that my 2 years in the army gave me much satisfaction, including enjoyable postings in Germany. Some of my fellow servicemen were not as fortunate. They did not get overseas, but spent their time splashing around Salisbury Plain on seemingly endless exercises. More seriously, others were sent to Korea. At the end of it all, around the early 1950s, World War III had not broken out after all, and a troubled sort of peace was maintained thereafter. I suppose we could say we did our bit without firing a shot in anger, and that is how I am pleased it worked out.
Belgarum's alternative look at the news this week comprises two items, the first of which is headed Something Beautiful. Out of the dark pandemic, three villages have created something beautiful. Villagers in Corhampton, Meonstoke and Exton have been working for months on completing a coronavirus tiled mural.
It's difficult.
Yes. At the beginning of lockdown, villagers were donated around 100 clay tiles and put to the community to paint and decorate them. Some 85 are going on COVID-friendly display in the Meon Hall on Saturday. One of the organisers, Nell Gibson, said, "They represent people's individual experiences of lockdown, from births to deaths and everything in between. It's actually quite an emotional journey to look at each one individually." And there's a photograph of the tiles created by the villagers, which looks very, very interesting.
And the second Belgarum item is a pleasant spot for a Christmas tree. Have you ever wondered why the Christmas tree in Winchester High Street is in exactly the same place every year? Whilst Belgarum attended the Business Improvement District's virtual forum meeting last Wednesday, October the 21st, the answer was disclosed. For those who rarely visit the city centre, no, it is not the same tree that stays there all year round. Instead, that section of the pavement has a large manhole cover which can be opened up. The tree is slotted into the ground and is often a perfect width, which means not much else is necessary to secure the trunk. This year's tree is set to arrive on Monday, November the 8th. Oh, sorry, 9th. Usually the bid will buy it from a supplier in Romsey, but because of COVID-19, it had to go further afield this year. And they're showing a lovely Christmas in Winchester at the turn of the millennium. Mayor Alan Mitchell waves to the crowds in front of the tree, and they won't be so close together this year.
This week's announcements begin with lighting up times, which end on Friday the 30th of October 2020 at 6:55 a.m. and begins at 4:42 p.m. On Wednesday the 29th of January, it ends at 7:04 a.m. and begins at 4:33 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Liz LeGrice on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. Now we continue with items of general news, and the first gives COVID-19 the latest numbers. Two more people from the Winchester district have died of COVID-19 in the last 7 days. On Tuesday, for the fourth day running, Hampshire saw more than 200 new cases of COVID-19. Since last Tuesday, the number of county cases has soared from 8,063 since the start of the pandemic to 9,550 on Tuesday, an increase of 1,487. In the last week, there have been 10 deaths in the Hampshire County Council area, bringing the figure to 744. In the Winchester district, there have been 172 new cases in the 7 days to Tuesday, from 797 to 969. It was 96 in the 7 days previously. Wednesday's figures are released after the Chronicle goes to press. Winchester district comprises more than just the city and its city council area, which stretches from Micheldever in the north to Southwark in the south, from Sparsholt in the west to Bramdean in the east. There have been no new cases reported in schools, colleges or universities following the six at University of Winchester on Monday, bringing the number of students affected to 26, although 7 have recovered. In the last 7 days, new cases have been reported at Denmead, John Keble in Hursley and Osbury Primaries, and King's Secondary School. The number of deaths in Hampshire hospitals is now 634. The figures for fatalities in Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which includes the RHCH, is 166, with no deaths reported since the weekend. Only deaths that occur in hospitals where the patient has tested positive for COVID-19 are recorded, with deaths in the community excluded, such as those in care homes. Total deaths since the start of the pandemic of people who have had positive tests for COVID-19 and died within 28 days of the first positive test. In the Winchester district, the figure is 82 and below the national average.
Now we come to Christmas 2020 is not cancelled, says BID. Christmas in Winchester is still very much on the cards, but the preparations are being kept under wraps. The tree will be in its usual spot in the High Street, and the lights, which are already in place, will be switched on. But there will not be a torchlit procession through the city. The annual fireworks have been cancelled, and a local hero will not be pushing the big red button in front of thousands. Sarah Davis, Projects Manager at Winchester BID, said she cannot tell people when the lights are set to be illuminated. She told a BID forum, "I can't tell you exactly when because we're not allowed to incite massive crowds. Last year, 20,000 stood in the High Street to watch them come on." Christmas in Winchester is still happening, although it will be very different. It's a big project for me and I absolutely love it. Of course, the High Street will be much calmer this year, meaning the locals can enjoy it without feeling crammed in and rushed around. The BID will be filming festive footage throughout November and December. There will also be a mulled wine trail for adults and a nutcracker trail for families to complete with a chance to win prizes. We have a 38-foot tree this year, which isn't quite as big as normal, but I assure you it will be looking lovely, said Sarah. Christmas in Winchester will probably start in around 3 weeks' time, and we can't wait. And there's a picture of last year's tree, I presume, in the precinct, and also the light switch on from last year. Again, not socially distanced.
Scarecrows pop up across the district. This is headed Scarecrows in Oliver's Battery and Otterbourne. Scarecrows took over a chunk of the Winchester district as two communities hosted competitions. Otterbourne C of E Primary School launched its village-wide festival, which is set to run until the end of the month. It is hoped to raise £5,000 to replace the school's outdated whiteboards. Around 40 scarecrows have been put up in various streets. Rhys Davis told the Chronicle, "The last few days has seen dozens of families crisscrossing the village to tick off all the entries." The first ever scarecrow competition in Oliver's Battery, which has now ended, was a real community event. Dozens of residents got involved and the village streets were lined with unique creations, all themed in their own way. Demelza Healy thanked the community for their efforts. She said, "On behalf of the community, I would like to thank Oliver's Battery Events Group for organising the inaugural Scarecrow competition in September. It was a real community event, as proved by the quantity of entries which kept appearing in neighbours' gardens. Not only did it give individuals and family groups a purpose to their walks, but it took them into roads hitherto unexplored. Residents enjoyed watching the stories, a true example of local entente cordiale, good news all round." And there are a number of photographs accompanying the article, including two of loving couples, that's a man and a woman, embracing each other. Don't know what will happen with that. There's a cricketer guarding the stumps, a French Johnny Onion seller, and somebody inviting everybody to a tea party.
New park and ride plan may move. A new park and ride for North Winchester may not be built as part of the King's Barton development, but further out of the city, a public forum heard. A small park and ride site is part of the planning conditions for the 2000 home King's Barton development. Park and ride to the north of Winchester is a major part of the Winchester movement strategy. Viv Hill of Carla Homes told King's Barton Forum that the developer was looking to review park and ride provision. He said, "We haven't any plans at this particular moment. We have consent to deliver park and ride at the 650th occupation. It's currently around 280. If it could migrate further north into a larger facility, it is an opportunity to put our thinking caps on about land use." Councillor Martin Todd, the City Council Cabinet member overseeing traffic, said the possible sites now included up to the Three Maids Hill area. Detailed studies are being done to look at what sites might be logistically possible. We are a long way away from buying a site and putting a plan in place. Work is being done on where we might put one and how it might work. The forum heard about teething problems on the new estate. Katerina Zucker, chairman of the King's Barton Residents Association, raised a number of issues. Ms. Zucker said, "Andover Road needs to be made safer with a pedestrian crossing point. There was a fatal accident in January. A crossing is long overdue." She said the number of people crossing the road would only increase as the new school fills up. Chris Hughes, King's Barton Implementation Officer at the City Council, said, "There's a lack of desire of Hampshire County Council to get this sorted out. It's something I desperately want done as well. Hampshire County Council is not willing to spend money because Andover Road is scheduled to be closed to through traffic in 4 years. Mr. Hill said there were teething problems with the play areas. "We were incredibly embarrassed and disappointed with the quality of the soil. It is a chalky site and stones were coming through the topsoil, the turf and the seeds. It wouldn't be safe for children to play there if they fell over. They would cut themselves if they fell over." Wooden fencing was being replaced by metal ones and dead trees were being replaced too. "Street furniture and dog litter bins should be going in imminently," said Mr. Hill, who said the COVID lockdown had disrupted plans. Councillor Todd supported Ms. Zucker's stance. "I strongly support the residents' campaign and will do what I can to make it happen." The forum agreed to write to the County Council. There are other things needing to be sorted. Proposed granite sets for the middle strip of the main road through the estate are considered too dangerous for cyclists and motorcyclists. The previous idea of a shared space where pedestrians have priority is also being reviewed following government guidelines, said Mr. Hughes. "New homes on King's Barton are selling well," said Mr. Hill, "with 5 or 6 going a month, better than Carla's average elsewhere. So far, 258 homes have been occupied, a little more than 10% of the 2,000 total. 40% of the homes at King's Barton will be affordable for people on the City Council waiting list."
Not a clear, exact science. Health bosses in Hampshire have explained what will trigger a decision to move the county into a new level of COVID-19 restrictions. Public health directors in Hampshire and Southampton said there will be a number of factors that will be considered before deciding whether the county will have to move from Tier 1 to Tier 2. As reported, Hampshire and Southampton area are both in Tier 1 and are classified as being on medium alert. This means that pubs, bars and restaurants have to close at 10 p.m. and the rule of six is in place both indoors and outdoors. But should the county move into Tier 2, the mixing between different households indoors will not be allowed, and the rule of six will apply outdoors only. Health bosses said the decision to move into Tier 2 will be taken by directors of health, civic chiefs and the government. Simon Bryant, Director of Public Health at Hampshire County Council, said there's not an exact figure or factor that will trigger a decision to move into Tier 2. It's not a clear exact science, he said. He explained that the rate of infection and how the NHS is coping with an increase in cases are among the aspects that will be considered before making any decision. Debbie Chase, Director of Public Health at Southampton City Council, said, "We are looking at a whole range of data to get as full a picture as possible of the impact of COVID-19 on Southampton. This includes not just positive tests, but early indicators like 111 calls and, of course, hospital admissions and deaths. A decision to move into a higher tier of restrictions will involve looking at this whole picture in close conversation with central government and our partners locally in the NHS and other sectors." Both directors of public health have repeatedly urged residents to comply with the rules. It comes as the number of coronavirus cases across the county continues to rise. The most recent figures have revealed the weekly rate of infection in Hampshire is 57.9, while the weekly rate is 68.9 in England and 369.1 in the northwest. Meanwhile, in Southampton, the weekly rate has gone up to 70. Health bosses said that although the numbers remain lower than the rest of the country, it is not time to be complacent. Councillor Lorna Fielker, Cabinet Member for Health and Care at the City Council, said, "We are heading into a crucial period for the city. Any infection rate is relatively low here compared to the national average, but we know it is rising. I want to thank Southampton residents for the sacrifices they have made so far in keeping the virus under control. But now more than ever, we need to stick with it. If the county moves into Tier 2, tradespeople will still be allowed to visit other households."
Remembrance service online. Remembrance Sunday at Winchester Cathedral will go ahead next month, but in a very different way. COVID-19 restrictions mean there will be no outdoor ceremony and only a small number of people will attend the service. People will be invited to watch the service on a live stream into their homes. The service usually attracts around 1,000 people every year. This year, it will be for a limited number of invited people, including members of the military, veterans and uniformed organisations, schools and colleges, councils, faith leaders, the mayor, high sheriff and a representative of the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire. It will be held inside the cathedral in a socially distanced way. The decision, announced on Friday, was made after consultation with the City Council's Safety Advisory Group, Public Health England, the Royal British Legion and local regiments. The Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, said, "After close consultation with partners, sadly, we will not be able to have an outdoor commemoration. We know this will be a great loss to many. However, we are so pleased now to be able to offer live streaming of this significant service, enabling people to come together while ensuring everyone stays safe." The Mayor, Councillor Patrick Cunningham, said, "Remembrance ceremonies this year will be unlike any other, but we must find new ways to reflect, remember and observe this important occasion. I actively encourage you to watch the live stream of the service at 10 a.m. on Remembrance Sunday, the 8th of November. And I invite you to stand on your doorsteps at 11 a.m. to share in a united 2-minute silence to remember all those who are currently serving, those who have served in the past, and those who have given their lives. People are also encouraged to light a candle in the cathedral in the week before Remembrance Sunday. In the week after, they can lay wreaths by the war memorial or crosses in the nearby Royal British Legion Garden of Remembrance. The service is open to everyone online at 10 a.m. on the cathedral website.
King Alfred to bloom next spring. Saturday the 24th of October was World Polio Day, and to mark the occasion, local Rotarians planted 4,000 purple crocus corms around the base of King Alfred's statue in the Broadway. In August, Rotary and the World celebrated a significant milestone as the World Health Organization certified the African region was free from wild polio. This leaves just Pakistan and Afghanistan as the two remaining polio endemic countries in the world. Purple has become a symbolic colour in the fight against polio, inspired by the colour of the dye painted on the little finger of a child to signify they have received their vaccine. This is essential on mass immunisation days, when literally millions of children receive the vaccine across entire regions. Winchester Rotary Past President Jill Russell, a polio survivor herself, said Rotary clubs all over Great Britain and Ireland mark the End Polio Now campaign each year by planting purple crocuses in public spaces. "We are delighted that the City Council has allowed us to do this in Winchester. The purple crocus has become a symbol of the campaign." The Mayor of Winchester, Patrick Cunningham, along with City Councillors Jackie Porter and Linda Murphy, went along to offer support. Jill and fellow Rotarian Dr. Cordus Saeed are among the 6 club members who have taken part in immunisation days in India in recent years, seeing at first hand the enormous efforts put into mass vaccination on the ground. "We're all looking forward to a great display around King Alfred next spring," added Jill. And there's a photograph accompanying this of the Rotarians, all there in their tabards, with the mayor and councillors, everybody socially distanced and in masks.
The traditional dig in Hyde was not stopped by the COVID pandemic. It was Hyde 900's 2020 community dig. COVID failed to disrupt the traditional archaeological dig over King Alfred weekend. After months of preparation, the Hyde 900 2020 community dig took place over 4 days on the site of Hyde Abbey. This year, the dig sites were in 4 separate gardens, making this the largest and most ambitious dig by the group. The project was run with the help of members of Hyde 900, local experts, and WARG, a Winchester archaeology and history group. Hundreds of hours of planning were put in by a dedicated team to ensure the event met all government guidelines to provide as safe an environment as possible for those taking part. Dig organiser David Sperling said, "The level of enthusiasm of those participating, over 200 in total, was extraordinary, especially given the amount of wind and water thrown at them as they dug." In the finds tent, the items discovered were processed. Here there was excitement aplenty as muddy finds were cleaned to reveal artefacts that all add to the understanding of the history of this important monastery, which was commissioned by Henry I in 1110 as the final resting place of Alfred the Great. As well as fragments of stone, columns and an abacus from the abbey, this year Hyde 900 members were delighted to discover part of a Neolithic flint, a Roman pot and pieces of medieval encaustic tiles with a pattern not hitherto seen. In the gardens, the remains of robbed-out Hyde Abbey walls were uncovered, and also part of the Bridewell floor and walls, the prison built over the remains of the abbey in 1788 to serve the county. Steve Bryan MP came with his son to help. they found an oyster shell, one of a collection of shells discovered from what must have been the remains of the Abbey kitchens. Mr. Brine said, "Well done, the volunteers of Winchester's Hyde 900, for organising another community dig today. A huge amount of work, given the COVID-safe requirement and the elements." The Mayor of Winchester, Patrick Cunningham, arrived with his family on Sunday to take a tour. They were fascinated to learn what lay beneath these Hyde gardens and intrigued to be able to handle such ancient artefacts. Dr. John Crook, consultant archaeologist to Winchester Cathedral, was on hand to explain the importance of the finds in one of the gardens, where diggers discovered the continuation of an abbey wall and pavement found in an adjoining garden during the digs in 2017 and 2018. Some of these discoveries are now exhibited in the City Museum, courtesy of the Hampshire Cultural Trust, in two display stands. Part of a cloistral arch and fascinating finds from the two digs. Other events over the weekend included a lecture by Dr. Patrick Ottaway on the subject King Alfred of Wessex, England's greatest town planner, and a church service. And there are photographs of, I think there's a mother and daughter digging away in the garden, and part of the wall that was discovered in one of the gardens.
Fighting waste. Hampshire Fair has joined the fight against food waste. The group is the first of its kind to partner with the waste reduction app Too Good To Go. This provides Hampshire Fair, which brings together the county's finest produce, with a new approach to sustainability. Commercial manager Tracy Nash said, "People are increasingly aware that food waste is a massive problem which needs addressing. This partnership is a decisive step towards helping our members tackle food waste. Too Good To Go has an approach that is fun, functional, and provides an easy-use platform for both businesses and consumers. As the first county food group in the country to partner with Too Good To Go, I view this as a positive step for Hampshire as well as Hampshire Fair members. This initiative is a win-win-win. It allows Hampshire Fair members to cover some food waste costs, the purchaser makes a good value buy, and edible food is not wasted. In addition, Hampshire Fair members who sign up will benefit by having the first year's admin fee waived. Tracy is now encouraging food and drink businesses with regular food waste to register with the Too Good To Go app.
Officers in tears and fearful over behaviour. An officer had a fear of repercussions if he had reported his colleagues for their behaviour, a police misconduct hearing has been told. Detective Constable Sol Koranteng was a member of staff at the Serious and Organised Crime Unit, SOCU, North Office, at the time when his colleagues were recorded making racist, homophobic and sexist remarks. DC Koranteng, who is not accused as part of the case, was often the subject of racist abuse, the proceedings have claimed, by other officers in the unit. Jason Beer, on behalf of Hampshire Constabulary, said that DC Koranteng learnt to adapt and not to say things in order to survive at the organisation. And when he was made aware of the comments, he said he made a mistake by not challenging such behaviour. The hearing has been told that the unit named part of its office African Corner and had placed a map of the continent on a whiteboard where two officers of African heritage sat. The two officers subject to the nickname were DC Koranteng and former PC Craig Bannerman, who faces misconduct charges. Detective Sergeant Greg Wilcox said that he thought it was to reflect their background or culture and considered it a positive association, but constabulary state that this was racist. Another officer was left in tears after she felt she could not trust DC Wilcox, who used her as the butt of the joke. In one incident, D.S. Wilcox joked about trainee Detective Constable Jean Englefield's sexual interest in another officer, which he had made up. In a recording, she said, "I just feel very vulnerable. I can't talk to Greg, D.S. Wilcox. I don't trust him as far as I can throw him." Six officers from the unit based at the Northern Police Investigation Centre in Basingstoke are accused of making comments of a discriminatory nature or of an inappropriate or offensive nature between March the 9th and April the 2nd of 2018. The serious misconduct proceedings arose following a complaint about the team's behaviour and covert recording was carried out. The hearing continues.
Visit museum without leaving your home. A Hampshire museum that was saved by the public from closure during lockdown has launched a visual tour. The Jane Austen Museum in Chawton was on the brink of shutting over the summer when benefactors from across the globe rallied to raise almost £100,000. Despite celebrating being able to stay open, visitor numbers in the former home of the celebrated author are still limited. To allow fans who chipped in to still experience what it has to offer, the museum has launched a new interactive experience called Jane Austen House from Home series, rewarding worldwide fans with a selection of online experiences. Visitors can embark on a 360-degree tour of the red brick cottage where Austen wrote all of her six major novels on a small and fragile 12-sided walnut table. The tour, made possible thanks to support from the Art Fund, includes detailed information on the house, an audio guide to liven the experience, which includes readings from Austen's personal letters. A 360-degree cat's eye audio tour is also available for children, allowing them to explore the garden under the guidance and knowledge of the museum cat. The museum's collection and interpretation manager, Sophie Reynolds, said, "With museum visits so much reduced in the face of the global pandemic, our new Jane Austen's House from Home resource makes the house accessible to people around the world from the comfort and safety of their own homes. Of course, the visit to Jane Austen's House from Home does not replace the magic of a trip around the house itself, but we hope it will help keep our dedicated and passionate audience happy till they're able to visit in person." The museum reopened in August after raising £95,949 with new social distancing measures and a one-way system, as well as the requirement for visitors to wear face masks. The fundraising campaign by the Art Fund, the charity which runs the museum, was buoyed by the celebrity endorsement of TV host Alan Titchmarsh, historian Lucy Worsley and comedian David Baddiel. Virtual exhibitions of Jane Austen's artful letters and an exploration of her teenage years or in a choice collection of curiosities are also available on the museum website. The virtual tour was created by Pan 360 Limited with illustrator James Robinson and is accessible via the museum's website. And there is a photograph of Jane Austen's House Museum in Chawton.
A new test will detect those most at risk, says the headline here. Southampton researchers at the forefront of the fight against the coronavirus pandemic have identified a blood test that could help predict which COVID-19 patients are at greatest risk of becoming critically ill. The new study by the University of Southampton shows that testing for five cytokines, proteins released into the bloodstream following an infection, could help identify those who face life-threatening overstimulation of immune defences due to the disease. While cytokines help the immune system suppress infection, an overproduction of these proteins can cause hyperinflammation, which can seriously harm or even kill the patient. The researchers said their work could help identify which COVID-19 patients are at greater risk of hyperinflammation or cytokine storm and tailor treatments. The breakthrough was welcomed by Royston Smith, Tory MP for Southampton Itchen. He said, "At a time when good news is in such short supply, Southampton researchers have again given us something to be optimistic about. This potential life-saving test could be the game-changer we all so desperately want."
Depot site set to be sold off. Winchester Civic Chiefs have agreed to sell off their former depot amid concerns about a lack of public consultation. The site on Bar End Road will be marketed at some point in the future to help address the financial problems partly caused by the COVID-19 health crisis, Cabinet agreed. A group of local people are trying to set up a community trust to ensure that any proposals include assets such as a shop or community centre. Several people addressed Cabinet on the issue. Charles Radcliffe said, "I understand the council is minded to sell the site, which raises real concerns for many of us." Residents in Bar End and neighbouring Highcliffe have long been promised new community facilities and a local shop, both of which are conspicuously lacking. They've repeatedly been told the depot site would be redeveloped only after proper consultation with affected communities. That consultation has not happened, not properly. And by selling the site, there is a risk the council will lose control over what gets built there. Jeff Wright of Quarry Road said, "There's been no consultation on the future use of the depot site. Residents have had no opportunity to propose or discuss what they would like or not like to see on the site." Former City Councillor Janet Berry, who represented Bar End and Highcliffe, said, "Is the council going to consider local needs and aspirations of the community?" The group have written to the council proposing a not-for-profit community development trust, something which has been used across the country. The group asked for a six-month period of exclusivity in which they would set up the trust and submit an offer to the council. The Cabinet heard that nothing is going to happen immediately. Councillor Kelsey Lerney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, said, "We are not looking at a fire sale here. We will be looking at the general market situation and will make the benefit to the local community a key consideration. Without going to market, we have no idea what the range of uses might be there. The proposed community development trust is to be welcomed, and we look forward to a full proposal coming forward." Opposition Councillor Hugh Lumby said, "I am worried by the rush to sell. It feels like panic reaction when a more measured approach would yield more benefit." Future uses of the depot have included housing, commercial, healthcare, shops and a hotel.
"It sounds like you do not trust your planning officers," is the heading for this item. Every Sparsholt resident who takes care of their front garden is breaking the law. At least this is what was claimed by Winchester City Council Planning Committee whilst debating a controversial application. Mr and Mrs Conroy of Mount View in Church Lane had applied to change the use of a highway verge bordering their house. They'd asked to use it as amenity land. Effectively, the couple have been illegally mowing the grass there for 25 years, said Nick Culhane, the highways agent representing the Conroys, at a meeting on October the 22nd. He said that because the land is officially a highway verge, it is the responsibility of Hampshire County Council Highways team. "The council do mow the grass twice a year, but the Conroys wish to keep it looking nice all year round, as they always have," he added. But there are not any footpaths in Sparsholt, which led Councillor Brian Laming to say This could mean that technically the whole village of Sparsholt is breaking the law, because almost everyone keeps their grass maintained nicely and most lawns border a road. Many villages across the district are the same. So why change the status quo? The exact bureaucracy was not figured out during the meeting, but the plans were unanimously refused. The issues have implications for many other villages in the district with similar wide verges. City Councillor Caroline Horrell, who represents Sparsholt, said, "There are no footpaths, and this piece of grass is used to walk on to the church and elsewhere. Allowing the residents to use this as amenity land enables development rights. Although there will be planning conditions put in place, these will not last forever. It is not like anyone will park on the grass and ruin it. There are already bollards in place to stop that. Why should this land be gifted to a resident? If the applicant really did not want to change anything on the land, then why would they apply to own it?" "There is a longer-term goal here," Mr. Culhane responded. "It's not gifted, it's more to get the correct rights in place. People don't sit here and have a picnic, it's a highway verge. To me it sounds like you do not trust your planning officers to enforce the conditions that are put in place. There is no underlying scheme here, and if the applicants wanted to change anything they would have to come back to the council anyway." And there's a picture of two semi-detached houses with their hedges, and in front of that a wide grass verge with bollards so that cars can't get there before you get to the road. And you can see how it would have to be maintained to look good. So we'll leave it at that.
Brewer is going greener over its deliveries. A Winchester brewery has been looking at more ways of going green. Following its 2019 Eco Award from Winchester BID, Alfred's has been exploring ideas to be more sustainable. Having launched a new beer and bottle delivery service during the pandemic, the natural avenue to explore was a greener delivery system. Business manager Matt Pye said, "We're a small business in a vibrant and beautiful city. We want our environmental impact to be small, but also want our customers to have choice regarding their beer delivery. Alfred's Brewery, based at Winnell Farm Industrial Estate, Eastern Lane, has linked up with Zedify, a local eco-delivery service who use electric vans, bikes and trikes for deliveries. Its zero-emission delivery service appeals to Alfred's retail customers, answering the need for both cost-effective and ethical deliveries. It means the streets of central Winchester are cleaner, quieter and less congested. As well as redistributing brewing spent grains and hops to farmers and gardeners using sustainable utilities and careful planning of delivery routes, they are also now recycling all their waste cardboard and nearly all their plastic at the new EcoGen Recycling Centre in Kingsworthy." Head brewer Steve Haig said, "We want our impact on the planet to be as small as possible, but our impact on Winchester's taste buds to be huge. Alfred's will also recycle plastic wrapping that comes on their cases of 12 bottles if you return it to the brewery."
Dance resumes. A grant has allowed a Winchester dance school to resume a full class schedule back in their studio after a summer of virtual classes. Move Momentum secured the funding thanks to the new Investing in Communities project launched by Energise Me and funded by Sport England and the National Lottery. The project supports groups in the wake of COVID-19, aiming to reduce the widening inequalities in physical activity and sport. Move Momentum has allowed dancers and teachers to dance in a social distant environment and is now offering a full timetable of classes targeted at young people, over 65s, and people with physical disabilities. Amanda Watkinson, project manager, said, "We're absolutely thrilled to be back in the studio, largely possible thanks to the grant. The feeling of seeing all of our dancers back in the studios, socially distanced, was a real treat after spending so many months delivering virtual classes. There's still a lot of uncertainty in the world right now, but we are looking forward to the term ahead and supporting our community with the escapism and friendship that dance can provide." Emma Dovener, youth project manager at Energize Me, added, "We are delighted to have supported Move Momentum through our Investing in Communities project. The work that they do to enable dancers of all ages and abilities to be active in ways that suit them is so important."
The show will go on at City's Theatre Royal. The show will go on this Christmas. Theatre Royal Winchester has announced a panto-style play called Four Dames in Search of a Panto to run in December. Social distancing measures will be in place, including the removal of every other row of seats in the auditorium and leaving two empty seats between each family. Face masks must be worn by everyone over the age of 11, unless the customer is exempt. Hand sanitizer stations will be in place throughout the building, a one-way system will be set up, and the venue has increased its cleaning routine throughout, with regular disinfection of the auditorium, foyer and toilet areas. Derek Newland, chief executive of Play to the Crowd, the charity that runs the Theatre Royal Winchester, comments, "We know how important our pantomime is to so many families in Winchester and beyond. After we made the heartbreaking decision to postpone Aladdin until the next year, we promised we would do our best to put something on in its place. We are delighted that the same creative team behind our hugely successful pantomimes will be returning with Four Dames in Search of a Panto, with four familiar faces to our panto audience in the cast. The show will be written and directed by James Barry, with original music by Simon Slater. Last year, Mr. Barry was nominated for Best Script in the Great British Pantomime Awards for Dick Whittington, and the previous year, together with composer Simon Slater, was nominated for Musical Achievement for Beauty and the Beast. Our brief for this Christmas was to make the show feel as close as possible to our usual pantomime style, not only by bringing back our favourite cast regulars, but by also ensuring that all the ingredients of our audience, that our audiences know and love, are there," said Mr. Barry. "The show will feature panto set pieces, glorious gags, plus some very corny ones too, original songs and lots more, all guaranteed to fill everyone, young and old, with some much-needed Christmas cheer." This is accompanied by a photograph of people from last year's pantomime.
Pupils at the city's newest school are being forced to walk along a muddy path because the county council won't pay, say campaigners. Hairstock parents with children at Barton Farm Academy are asking for the Ridgeway to be resurfaced, writes Sam Hatherley. But Councillor Jackie Porter says county chiefs are holding out, despite the poor condition of the path, which is also used by dog walkers. She said, "We're talking to parents whose children have started at Barton Farm School. They love the school, but aren't impressed by the route to get there. Despite funding of £1 to £2 million in the bank, and following a frustrating meeting with the county council and the school in August, we knew the path was going to be muddy when parents and children started school. We have had this work, it's approximately £40,000, for a 3-metre-wide stone path to the school from Andover Road. But the county is holding out. They just won't pay." Councillor Porter met city councillors Anne Weir and Kelsey Lurney to walk the route. "The current path is well used by dog walkers, and so, as well as a muddy surface after rain, often dog faeces is dropped along the way. So it's not just difficult, but unpleasant too," said Councillor Weir. Councillor Porter added, The County Council has failed to convert the footpath into a cycle path, even though we've been asking for this to happen since planning permission for the school was agreed. The Lib Dems put forward a motion to the County Council for school streets to enable children to walk and cycle safely to school. We want the Conservative Council to put their plans into action here. Children deserve a good start, especially this year. We all agree we want the County Council to do the right thing and surface the path. The County Council was approached by the Chronicle for a comment, but had not responded at the time of going to press. Barton Farm Primary Academy School opened on time in September for 27 children in the reception class. Much of the space is currently unused, but it will gradually fill up over the next few years as more families move into the 2000 home estate. And there's a picture of people at the entrance to the path with their buggies and children obviously standing there protesting.
Santa on Watercress Line. Children will be able to meet Father Christmas on the Watercress Line this year. The railway has added to its festive events with a grotto being set up at Ropley Station through November and December. There will be vintage fairground rides, a miniature railway, a petting farm and a market. Simon Baggett, General Manager, said, "We are delighted to offer a Father Christmas experience at the Watercress Line this year, in addition to our spectacular steam illuminations event, which we recently announced. Families may have some reservations about Father Christmas experience this year, but we are ensuring it is compliant with government guidelines while keeping the magic alive for children. Although visitors will need to socially distance from Father Christmas, he will not be wearing a face covering to ensure the best experience for children and allow you to take advantage of photo opportunities. Due to government guidelines, bookings are available up to a maximum of 6 people. And there is a small photograph of Father Christmas on the Watercress Line last year.
Man took own life over online gambling debts. A smart and intelligent man took his own life after accruing more than £10,000 of debt through online gambling. Software engineer Ragotam Kajula also owed more than £32,000 through loans and credit cards, Winchester Coroner's Court heard. The 36-year-old died after being hit by a Bournemouth-bound train passing through Shawford's train station at just after 9 p.m. on March the 31st. The driver of the vehicle said that despite applying the emergency brakes, the train, which was travelling at 90 miles an hour, was not able to stop in time. The Eastleigh worker's wife, Sareka Puchakayala, told the inquest via video link that her husband had been tackling his addiction for several years. As a result, they'd planned to move back to their home country of India earlier this year, where betting has been partly outlawed, but this plan had been put on hold due to coronavirus. Yet despite this, she told the court that her husband was always happy and jovial. She said he was a very smart and intelligent person. He never let his sadness come out. He was always a very happy person. I never saw that sadness of his face. Sometimes he would share it with me, but never showed it. She added that Ragotam, who worked in Winchester, had tried to get rid of his addiction, but was unable to do so. "I never would have expected that this could happen," she said. "Everyone liked him, and he was a very good person, but the addiction was the thing that destroyed our lives." Following the inquest, the coroner criticised online gambling sites. He said, "I continue to have grave concerns about online gambling, the ease at which it can be accessed, and how hard it can be to get out of it." Coroner Christopher Wilkinson said that notes found concluded that he had intended to take his own right. He recorded a conclusion of suicide.
Wildflower meadows to be planted in Winchester. 3 areas in Winchester are set to become a haven for biodiversity with the planting of wildflowers. More than 25 native species will be planted by contractors Id Verde at open space in Thurmond Crescent, Stanmore, Ivy Close Badger Farm, and opposite Stanmore Recreation Area. The news comes as the Council prepares to set out its Biodiversity Action Plan in January, which will highlight how leaders intend to enhance and protect essential biodiversity. The project stems from the Council inviting residents for suggestions for natural improvements. Cabinet Member for Climate Change, Councillor Linda Murphy, said, "We are committed to stopping the decline of species and to ensuring we're an area where wildlife thrives. Protecting biodiversity is one of the key reasons we made it our goal for the Council to be carbon neutral by 2024 and the wider district by 2030. The Council has previously planted flowers in recent years, including at St Giles Hill and Water Lane, and this article is accompanied by a photograph of the wildflowers at Water Lane."
National Award for Local Retailer. A local boutique has been named the best bridal retailer in the UK. Sass and Grace was awarded the prestigious title at the British Wedding Awards 2020. The company is based in East Stratton near Mitchellever and was opened in January 2016 by Sam Walsh, who left a busy career in the corporate world to pursue her passion. She said, "We are beyond thrilled to retain our crown of best bridal retailer in the UK. We would like to thank all of our amazing brides who took the time to vote for us. It's thanks to them that we are winners. Making the bride's experience special is at the heart of everything we do. At Sass and Grace, we passionately believe that buying a wedding dress shouldn't just be a transaction. It should be an unforgettable experience, helping make memories to treasure for a lifetime." Now, in its 12th year, the British Wedding Awards are one of the most respected in the industry. The ceremony was delayed from earlier in the year due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but recently took place online. Since opening, Sass and Grace won Best British Newcomer Award at the 2018 British Wedding Awards, Best Bridal Retailer in the 2019 campaign, and Best Wedding Attire Supplier at the Hampshire Wedding Awards.
Poetry Prize. The winner of the top prize at this year's Winchester Poetry Festival has been chosen, fighting off competition from 2,000 entries. Lewis Buxton from Norwich has become the fifth winner of the Winchester Poetry Prize for his poem Field Dressing a Rabbit, having placed third in 2019. The prize-giving ceremony this year was arranged as an online event, giving all of the long-listed poets the opportunity to attend. The competition judge, poet Andrew McMillan, congratulated the poets, highlighting that the poems had earned their place on the final long list by surprising me, by grabbing me by the scruff of my old T-shirt and not letting me go, by showing me things I didn't realise poetry could do. Festival chairman Stephen Boyce said, "This year has been a difficult one for many people and it was disappointing to have to postpone the Winchester Poetry Festival. So we're very pleased to be able to continue with the Poetry Prize. The popularity of the annual competition is immensely encouraging." The prize for best poem by a Hampshire-based poet, sponsored by Warren and Son, was won by Imogen Cook, a third-year student of creative writing and English literature at Winchester University, for her poem Nose Piercing. All the winning and commended poems are published in an anthology entitled Unseaming the Tendon, available from the Winchester Poetry Festival website or from P&G Wells Bookshop.
Emmaus fundraises for Beirut. Residents at the Emmaus community in Winchester have raised over £1,000 to show solidarity with people in Beirut following the devastating explosion in August, which made homeless around 300,000 people. Nigel Samuels, chief executive of Emmaus Hampshire, said, "Our companions know all too well what life is like when you lose your home. They were deeply affected by the scenes in Beirut and determined to do what they could to help now all our stores are open again." The companions held a cake sale and other activities in October, raising £1,018, which they have donated to the Beirut Recovery Programme appeal run by Emmaus International. The community on Bar End Road has remained COVID-free. Working in the social enterprise provides a vital element in the companions' training for independent living. The stores in Winchester, Eastleigh and Southampton are all open.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. With many thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams.
And thanks to our readers. Which is us! I don't think that should have been in there. We're thanking ourselves. We forgot to cut that out of the script. From us, Vara and Tom Williams, goodbye and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label in your wallet, please ensure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet. Thank you.
Thank you.